Thank you, Kelly. Good afternoon, everyone. Today I'd like to share with you an overview of an extension program that I conducted in Wisconsin that dealt with the link between insecticide seed treatments for corn and sandhill crane crop damage to field and sweet corn. And what I'd like to do today is first establish for you the agroecosystem link between corn seed insecticide use in Wisconsin and upper Midwest corn fields by farmers and corresponding crop damage by cranes. I'll specifically frame this as an IPM problem or issue at the agriculture-wildlife interface. And it was actually an unexpected problem that arose sort of in the daily life of an extension entomologist myself. Then I'm going to introduce to you what I'm calling an entomology program paradigm for addressing this problem. And that's going to be followed. I'll share with you some very brief outcomes, some key summary points of effective outcomes that were delivered to address this problem by a diverse partnership of stakeholders. And I would contend that the ability to have that diverse partnership was really enabled by this paradigm, which I'll have introduced to you. And then finally, I'll just conclude with some implications for extension entomologists, because I'm using corn seed insecticide treatments and the sandhill crane agricultural wildlife interface as a case study. But again, this could come up in another extension entomologist's realm with a different crop in a different state. So if we look back to the 1930s, at that time in Wisconsin, there were only 25 pairs of sandhill cranes. It's the eastern population of the greater sandhill crane population. The species was nearing extinction. And since that time, conservation efforts, particularly and specifically hunting prohibition and wetland conservation, really helped that population of greater sandhill cranes completely rebound and increase to numbers in the thousands throughout Wisconsin. They're now found, they've expanded their range, and they're found in all areas of the state, all counties of the state. This bird species migrates up from the south, from areas like Texas and the southern U.S. where they overwinter. And they will actually, as you can see, there's a flock arriving here. The cranes will actually arrive in Wisconsin in the upper Midwest, as you might expect, right about the time that farmers are preparing their cornfields for planting and planting. The slide that you're seeing, or the picture on your lower left, is a cornfield, and it was recently planted. This is a picture that was taken right after planting. And on the left, you see a row of corn that we call that spiking corn. It's just germinating. The corn seeds are just coming up above the soil. On the right, it may not look like much at first, but what you're seeing here are regular holes showing where a sandhill crane has gone methodically down the corn row at regular intervals following that corn planter, and the beak, you can see the beak impact, just removing all of those corn seeds. Damage like this can be in heavily affected areas up to 30%, sometimes much higher. It can cause, and often does, farmers to actually have to replant their fields. I would like to mention that what you're seeing here is the attractiveness of this corn crop to sandhill cranes is really when there's a greater percentage of endosperm still in the corn seeds. So that's corn seeds below the ground, germinating or spiking plants that you see here, and early seedlings. Once that plant is photosynthesizing by itself, the cranes are no longer interested in it. They will remain in the cornfield and use it as habitat. They'll forage for other insects in the soil insects, and they'll look for waste grain if you have that from the previous crop rotation. At that point, when the endosperm is gone, they will leave that corn alone. But that's an important point to remember. They'll stay in the cornfield, and that's a visual for education, as we have, as you might imagine, farmers and consultants being concerned about a large flock in their field. So historically, this potential conflict between crane use of agricultural lands and farmer productivity has been kept at bay by the use of lindane as a seed treatment for secondary soil insect pests like seed corn maggot and wireworm. Is being shown here. This is a seed box mix. It was very cheap. It was about 50 cents an acre. What farmers' observations and actually avian dietary aversion studies suggest and have showed is that sandhill cranes and birds in general are repelled by lindane-treated seeds. And that's an observation that we saw throughout the upper Midwest. These seed treatments, surprisingly, I think to a lot of people, most of the registrations were withdrawn for lindane in the 1980s. But six registrations were retained as crop corn was one of them, but seed treatments for several crops. And this is actually until 2006, August, when the EPA did withdraw the registration. That was 10 years after the passage of the Food Quality Protection Act. Of course, as most maybe familiar with in this room, or the FQPA led to registration of reduced risk insecticides, certainly an advancement for insect IPM in the corn field and sweet corn agroecosystem. It eliminated, you know, lindane as a persistent, toxic, bioaccumulative insecticide, something that farmers no longer had to use and mix. They can get this neonicotinoid or chloronicotinyl seed treatment. The seed is pre-treated before the corn is bagged and sold. They're no longer dealing with it in this capacity. And this really was widely adopted over that 10-year period. But again, an important thing to remember, it was still on the books as a registration through 2006 August. And finally, just keep in mind that lindane and the neonicotinoid insecticide class are registered for insects. That lindane relationship was really just a coincidental effect. The picture that you see on the left portion of this is the map of Wisconsin, and what I'm showing you there are the location of emergent wet meadows in Wisconsin. This is the primary roosting habitat for sandhill cranes. What you're seeing on the right side of the screen now are the agricultural lands that are within 1.2 kilometers or 3/4 of a mile from these wetlands. That is 1.1 million hectares or 2.8 million of Wisconsin's corn crop that's grown in this close proximity. And because cranes use a mix of public lands and privately owned crop fields, you could hopefully see here, I'm trying to demonstrate the potential for conflict between agriculture production and wildlife preservation interests. In fact, what we really have seen over the last, I got involved with this project, as you'll see, in 2005, but really, as this kind of map lights up, you're looking at these agricultural production areas. As growers shifted across the state and throughout our north central region to the neonicotinoid and insecticides, it really actually exacerbated this sandhill crane problem. Again, keeping in mind that the neonicotinoids do not repel cranes. So at this point in the talk, I'm going to introduce this concept for an extension programming model. And this is based on something that will be in a forthcoming article in the Journal of Extension. But again, this crane insecticide issue as a case study, keeping in mind a couple definitions. The first, according to the Extension Committee on Organization and Policy, or ECOP, community of place is defined by where people live, work, and play, or, for example, grow corn. Things. Communities of interest, seen here, are defined, these communities of interest emanate from shared interests of their members and are not confined to one organization or geographic location. So the model that I'm introducing in this paper and used to address this problem is that extension specialists, our roles originate first in a community of place. If you think about the Wisconsin farmers with the crane problems coming to their county extension agents for assistance, a campus-based specialist, we enter into communities of interest, and then we're able to come back after leveraging these resources and opportunities, partnership opportunities to our community of place to deliver more effective outcomes than had we just operated strictly at the farm field and tried to address the problem there. Prior to the university and myself, or you know, extension entomologists becoming involved in this, a nonprofit organization called the International Crane Foundation, based in Baraboo, Wisconsin, did research with private industry. They knew, based on crane behavior in fields, that they have very good learned behaviors, pyrotechnics, cannons, scare techniques, dummies. Will not take them out of, or will, they'll quickly adapt to that. And they do still want to use that field as a habitat. So the trick was to take corn off the menu, much as lindane did. The most promising material in this sense was a biopesticide, a plant-derived anthraquinone compound that did work well in a corn planter, was effective at low concentrations. It was actually labeled for geese in non-agricultural settings, and effective in the field. And then just to get into the final part of this talk, I wanted to show you then and just quickly demonstrate how I use that extension programming approach. What you're seeing at the top of the slide are several communities of interest, as I would call them. The IR4 project, which in this particular case we worked with their biopesticide program to develop the residue data that's necessary for registering AQ as a food use on corn, which had never existed to this point. Archaeum Life Sciences is a humane bird management operation or private industry. The U.S. EPA Office of Pesticide Management Program, the International Crane Foundation, and the Wisconsin DACCAP. The basic situation that we ran into in this was that these groups in particular, the International Crane Foundation and Archaeon Life Sciences, had previously tried to obtain a Section 18 or a special registration for AQ on corn to address this problem. Interestingly, one of the rationales that they gave for this was that lindane was being phased out or growers were no longer able to access lindane. When EPA looked at that on the books, they saw that lindane was actually still registered as a corn seed insecticide. So what these groups were dealing with, these communities of interest, were that they were trying to bring forward a biopesticide that could, again, you know, address this problem. But the EPA was saying, actually, you do have lindane available. As I got involved, as you can see here, I went through a series of steps working in with these different communities of interest, conducting surveys, and really finding out that even though lindane was still registered, it really wasn't used in practice. So during that 10 years between 1996, the Food Quality Protection Act, and 2006, the market share for the neonicotinoids, the reduced risk insecticides, had really become obviously a big market, widely adopted, and there were growers that still had lindane containing insecticides maybe in their in storage, and they were able to use it for cranes, this was really what really kind of broke up this pattern and what enabled the Section 18 to go through. You can see, just explaining again to EPA, they having an extension entomologist involved with different communities of interest, that lindane may be available or registered, but it was not practically available. That kind of opened doors and moved things along quickly. Was also able to write an IR4 national upgrade proposal for residue studies, and of course face-to-face interactions with farmers, bringing the EPA, the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, the International Crane Foundation, and the private industry that developed this compound to farmer meetings. So that was a really unique situation of having a wildlife organization face-to-face with farmers addressing this problem. And finally, you can see the outcomes, which I've alluded to. A Section 18 was approved for AQ as Avitec in field and sweet corn. It's been renewed for a couple of years. At the same time, the IR4 project did approve the national upgrade. The residue data for food use is underway, and we do expect a Section 3 label. And in this last slide, I just wanted to close with what I mentioned could be potential implications for extension on entomologist programming. The first is that I think as extension entomologists, we play what I call a signature role in both communities of place and communities of interest. And it allows us to go between those two realms if we're able to form what I would call seamless or honest broker relationships between the two communities. You can see here that this is something that could come up for any extension entomologist. We don't always have a hypothesis to test. There are unique local problems, sometimes just a problem to be solved. And finally, just that these, again, reinforcing that leaving that community of place, working with a diverse group of stakeholders really brings us very effective outcomes back at the local level. I'd like to acknowledge the collaborators and thank you for your attention. And thank you.